Dig this. You can save all the gimmicks and 86 the intro. You are finally listening to an unscripted podcast like no other, The Crow Show. Hello, hello, hello. Today is Sunday, March 6th, 2022. You're now listening to The Crow Show. I'm your host, Torch the Poet. And today I have my little sis in the world of podcasting, Miss Dion Sanchez, the host, the incomparable host, mind you, of Words of Heart Podcast. So, Miss Dion, how are you today?
I am great, Torch. Thank you for having me. I'm glad we were able to do this again.
I know, right? Yeah, the first time we did it on Twitter Spaces, I don't know what happened, but somehow that episode got lost. I think it was user error on my behalf. But nonetheless, you certainly gifted me with another opportunity to have a dynamic conversation with you. But before we do dive in, if you don't mind letting the listeners know a little bit about who you are and more about the podcast, and then we can go from there.
Sure. So as Torch just mentioned, my name is Dion Sanchez. I'm the host of the Words of Heart podcast. My podcast is about in-depth conversations of inspiration with an emphasis on mental health. It's coming up on 2 years in August since I've launched it, 3 seasons into it. And it's just a wonderful platform that I've been blessed with. And I just love the opportunity to share people's stories, whether it's porn or rape, or the topics vary in each and every single episode, because I give my guests opportunity to open their hearts and their minds and share what they feel comfortable sharing. And I just want my podcast to be a form of comfort and acceptance. And as you'll know in a few minutes, it's symbiotic to my own personal journey with mental health as well.
Now, what resonates with me is the fact of you want people to open up their hearts and open up their minds. So I plan on doing the same with you. I want to definitely open up your heart, open up your mind, if you will. I feel like a lot of people, including myself, have overcame what would be considered as the impossible. However, I don't know if a lot of your supporters, your audience, your fans, I don't know if they really know what you and I have discussed regarding you overcoming what would be considered impossible obstacles. And I'm doing the air quotation
right
around obstacles. But if you don't mind really giving people a bit of an understanding as to some of the impossible obstacles that you changed into possible and then overcame what seemingly would be something that is not easy to overcome. So with that being stated, I'm gonna open up the floor to you and I'm gonna let you have it regarding some of the impossible obstacles that you overcame. Because your podcast is the bomb. You know, I'm in my third season coming up as well. Your podcast is the bomb, real talk. And we could talk about that all day long. However, I feel like people can definitely go to your podcast and listen for themselves. But I want people to come here and realize, oh, damn, Dion is very relatable. And she's a fucking hero, respectfully. Yeah, I'm a Chicagoan, so I right. curse y'all. So
right.
my bad.
Yeah. Right, no worries.
But yeah, please go ahead and let people know.
Sure. So in regards to something that is impossible, it's probably the most impossible scenario in my life that many people wouldn't be able to predict. For the first 2 years of my life, I couldn't hear or talk. Your audience did hear that right. For the first 2 years of my life on this earth, I couldn't hear or talk. So I was just a baby with no speech, no voice, no hearing capabilities whatsoever. Eventually, when I became 3 years old, I did have the capacity to talk and hear and interact with people on a regular basis compared to first 2 years. Even though that is obviously a miracle in itself, it was still a struggle because I had many hindrances or delays as a result of how I was born. I have ADHD. I believe I had asthma when I was younger as well, but that's no longer a factor. And it wasn't easy for me. I was automatically categorized as different from the second I entered this world. And even though, hey, I'm talking and speaking, and that's a miracle already, my struggles really started, I guess, when I was three, as far as my mental health journey goes, which I advocate on my podcast. So I was a bit delayed or a bit behind. To give you a bit of a mental picture, if you will, for your audience, let's say people learn how to tie their shoes at, let's say, five. I learned at seven. So my mentality and cognitive development was slow. I didn't process things as normally as my regular peers would. It took me longer. So I was put into a special ed classroom because of my delays and hindrances, if you will, with other kids who have disabilities. And you would think because we share a common disability or goal, if you will, that it would be easy to interact and have friends in that respect. But it wasn't easy for me. To this day, I have no idea why. But when my dad would get ready to pick me up for speech therapy or physical therapy, which I had all growing up, he would see all the kids playing together in a group and I would be playing by myself. And that dynamic continued really up until I got ready to go into high school. So I was 3 years old and about 12 or 13 when that dynamic changed finally. So I struggled just being accepted by my peers, and I didn't ask to be different. I didn't ask for this to happen to me. It just did. And that being alone and just not having that socialization was an ongoing scenario played out in my life. Eventually, I don't know how soon after, but I was eventually put into a regular classroom with regular kids who, like, oh, this girl is smart, actually, let's get her out of here. So I was put in a new classroom with a new curriculum, new environment. The teacher in the special ed classroom took such an interest in me so much that she decided to transfer to a regular mainstream classroom so she can be my teacher. So that she's like an absolute mentor, and I still get in touch to her to this day. But so I'm put into a regular classroom. I'm not gonna use the word normal because there's many ways you can define that. And you would think that, oh, I'm with kids that function similar to me. I can interact with them. I can have friends finally. But that dynamic did not change. Even when I was transferred over, I just couldn't get accepted by my peers. I was just alone. Nobody would approach me or communicate with me. And again, that dynamic it began to take a toll on me growing up. To fast forward to fifth grade, I would answer a question, I would get it wrong, everybody would laugh. If somebody else answered the question wrong, nobody would laugh. So it's like, damn, I'm just destined to be alone, pretty much. I'm just destined to be alone, destined to not have any friends because I don't have that socialization. And I feel like, and it's not like I didn't have a good childhood. I have family, I have loved ones, sisters, siblings. I mean, I wasn't absolutely miserable, but that fundamental factor that I find imperative to you evolving into your personality is that group socialization. But I just didn't have that. I lacked that. So that missing piece is what made me struggle mentally and emotionally all throughout my life.
I'm over here taking notes. I'm that type of nerd, yes.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
And the reason why I do this is because, of course, I don't walk into these conversations, not interviews, but conversations with a script. Where I'm going with that is I wrote down the word different. Now, without trying to make this or shift this into about Torch the Poet, I do remember being 8 years young and being called a nigger by the Calumet Park Village police officer, to be exact, me and three other friends of mine when we were walking home from school. Where I'm going with that is the fact that my skin color was different, had that police officer feel as though, because he was white, feel as though he can say what he said. However, as I'm listening to you and enjoying our dialogue, and I hear that word different, I'm like, damn, that's different on a level, because I mean, hell, you and I are about the same skin complexion. However, I hear that word different, and I'm like, yo, that's different because up until three, she was not able to hear and or speak. So this level of being different is on a level that is well beyond my comprehension, because my level of different was based on my skin complexion. So I'm really wanting to know what, without triggering you in any way,
No, it's fine.
but I really want to know how much did that really play on your mental health? Because you and I both, we're advocates for mental health. But I do understand that when you're young, a lot of things regarding the forming of your mental health, the forming of who you will be, that happens obviously throughout your childhood. So when you're feeling alienated because of your quote unquote indifference, and I'm saying quote unquote because
Yes.
society can be assholes, let's be candid.
Right.
How did that mentally have a toll on you?
Well, I would cry myself to sleep every night. As far as confiding in anybody in regards to my struggles with it, I didn't really discuss it with my family. Perhaps that was wrong of me not to do, but they're biologically programmed to love me, so it's not really easy for me to share what I'm feeling. So as far as a support system, I just confided in God because I'm a Christian, but it was really difficult as a kid. I mean, kids get picked on for a variety of things. Your hair is too big, or you have glasses. I mean, I get picked on for those little silly mundane things that are silly to be made fun of, but it wasn't even that. It's just the fact that they are rejecting me for just being me. Just not for my hair or the fact that I wear glasses. You're rejecting me for the sheer fact that I'm me.
Exactly.
Like, how do you change that? Like, I couldn't change that. I didn't ask to be different. And I mean, it's fucked up because it made me coming into my own a lot harder. Like, if nobody wants to be my friend, there has to be something wrong with me. I have to be a freak. I mean, I can't even answer a question wrong like a normal kid without being laughed at. Like, what the heck? So it was hard. I would be by myself, probably like PE class by myself, shooting a basketball by myself. I wouldn't have any friends. And it's not like I didn't try to interact with people. I mean, I even became a hall monitor for crying out loud, and still nobody talked to me. So, I mean, I don't think you're supposed to like hall monitors, but that's besides the point. I was willing to do anything in my power to try to have some interaction with people, and I was just invisible. They did like, oh, this girl is glass, we can see through her or see nothing, or this isn't an object that we can interact with. So this was obviously elementary school. That whole math question being made fun of, I was in fifth grade. when that example occurred. So I had a full grasp on how people saw me, and it wasn't a good image. So I went on to middle school, still had no friends. I was still trying everything in my power to interact with people. But at this point, I was mature enough to understand that, okay, so I have no friends. I'm basically destined to be alone. If I were to die right now, would anybody care? Would anybody miss me? I might as well just end my life. And I, at that point, I did consider suicide pretty strongly in regard to that respect, because I was just so miserable. I mean, honestly, my faith is the only thing that held me grounded, but I needed more. I needed socialization. I felt like without that socialization, what is my purpose for being here? Like, really, why am I here if I'm just going to be alone? So as far as an attempt, as far as my recollection is concerned, I believe there was possibly just one attempt. To my memory, I may have been either 10 or 11 at this point, 10 or 10. I'm going to go with 10 years old. I don't think I was 9. I was by myself. I would pick up a butter knife. I'm like, oh, what if I gave myself a cut? What if I gave myself another cut and another, and then there'll be no more Dion. So, I was just tired of being alone, and I just couldn't take it anymore. I'm still here. So obviously, I didn't fulfill with that attempt, and there's no scarring on my arms, although there could have been, because I did hold on to that knife for an awfully long time. That's a bit of a hardcore example as far as how my mentality went to a dark place at that point. Fast forward to I'm in middle school, still have no friends, doing everything in my power to communicate and have that socialization. To give you an example, or older example, as I mentioned, I am a Christian, so I do go to church and every Sunday and all that good stuff. And I mean, God was probably my only friend, if I'm being honest, when I was younger. At this church, and this example is no disrespect to any congregation or congregation or demographic in any way whatsoever. This is just my own personal experience with the church. I still love God, so that has not changed. It just happened to occur in the church. So there are these small groups, and in a small group, you're filled with kids that are your own age, led by an adult or a high schooler. And in those small groups, you know, you're vulnerable, you're transparent, you share what's bothering you, and then, you know, you answer questions that may pertain to the sermon or message in that particular Sunday. So I would get ready to raise my hand because I want to speak and be vulnerable. And this, I don't know why this kept happening when I was younger, but without fail, I would get ready to talk, and I would be automatically interrupted by someone else in the small group. And instead of that small group leader being like, hey, this girl is talking, you'll have your turn, she'll start a separate conversation with the person that interrupted me. And like, oh, were you talking? They would just start a completely different conversation. And like, okay, damn, I really am invisible. I can't even be vulnerable for 2 seconds without being cut off or just put to the side like I'm nothing. So it sucked. Instead of that little girl who was by herself with a black, I'm now a middle schooler by myself on a couch waiting to get picked up while everyone else was hanging out. So again, this dynamic was just really, it was saddening, and I just hated that this, it seemed like this was a never-ending scenario. So why is this happening? So like I said, I tried everything in my power to be involved, try to get friends. I started volunteering. I'm like, okay, I volunteer, I serve God. They see me more. They have to acknowledge me. Again, I was trying everything in my power to get friends. So that wasn't moving in the direction I wanted. So it wasn't really until I went to a youth camp that my prayers were answered, if you will. There were some high schoolers. I was in middle school, about to get ready to go into high school at this point. Eighth grade, going into high school, still had no friends. I'm laughing because it's hard to think about now that that's how it was. But there was this youth camp coming up, and they were like, oh, Dion, you should go, you should go. They've sort of acknowledged my presence at this point, in a way. I'm like, oh, you should go, you should go. I was stubborn and resistant to going to this camp. Not that I don't want to get closer to God, because I've gone to these camps before, but it's the aftermath of coming home from these camps is what bothered me. Because you would go to these camps, you know, you're in fellowship, you're outside of your environment, you're cut off from technology, so you have no choice but to talk to somebody, pretty much. I'm like, okay, they have no technology, they have to be my friend. So I'm like, yay, I have friends, I'm not alone. Then I would come home, and bam, I'm invisible girl again. So I was about to go into high school, 12, 13. Why would I want to put myself through this dynamic again? Like, I'm smart enough to know the dynamic is not going to change. Yeah, I get closer to God, obviously, but I'll still be alone. So why would I want to go? But they're like, no, 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 go, go, go. So I went. And I think, honestly, that probably changed the whole trajectory of my life moving forward, going to that camp. I honestly don't think if I did not go, there would still be a Dion, honestly. Because I was about to go into high school, and I didn't feel like I had a purpose. I had no friends. Like, why is there Dion to begin with at this point? So I went to the camp. One of the final nights, the topic was the Holy Spirit. And I can only go off of my own interpretation as far as my explanation with it. And that's basically just a surge of emotion when it comes to love, grace, just coming over me and consuming me, if you will. And at that moment, I just felt loved and purposed, and like that I was cared about, that people were hugging me and crying. I'm like, Dion, we do love you. We would care if you were to die right now. Like, all that prayers, me crying every single night, wondering why the hell am I here, was just answered at that precise moment in time. And I'm just so unbelievably grateful for that moment, because I was able to go into high school with a clear head, with friends, with that socialization that I've been praying for, that I had purpose, I had meaning, I do have a reason for being here. I went on to high school, went into journalism, had friends, went to homecoming, did all normal socialization events that one does when they're a teenager and young, that I sort of missed out on growing up because I didn't have any friends. So went on to high school, graduated. Just to give you a little backtrack as far as being categorized different, the doctors told my family when I was born, oh, you might as well dope her up with medication. She's basically retarded. And doctors are jerks. They're not really supposed to have emotions. At least not all of them are supposed to have emotions, that is, because it's a hard profession. But
yeah, but that's a fucked up thing to tell
a parent, yeah.
Parent, yeah, yeah. That's
yeah, but that's what they told them. Obviously, they decided not to dope me up with medication, though I wasn't an easy child to raise because of my ADHD and a bunch of other stuff. But so the reason I brought that up, hey, they classified me as dumb automatically. I ended up graduating from high school with a 3.0 GPA and two scholarships. So, I mean, those others okay. Are probably not even alive anymore.
Okay.
This was the 90s, but like, okay, I proved you wrong and everybody wrong pretty much, because that moment, I mean, it wasn't just my moment, which it is pretty awesome, but it was like everybody's moment, my dad's moment, my aunt's moment. I was that kid that overcame so much and made it to, hey, she's smart, she did it, type of scenario. So
would you say that was a very pivotal moment as well? Maybe even a moment of recognition?
I think it was a pivotal moment because, I mean, yeah, I struggled with the whole getting acceptance, but I really had to work 5,000 times as harder because I was slow at learning because of my health conditions prior to me speaking. I mean, it continued on after I learned to speak, obviously. But it was a pivotal moment because I had to work so hard to prove everybody that I did have the capacity to be smart, to have the intelligence. I ended up graduating with two scholarships. The first scholarship I got in seventh grade, middle school, there were these kids who were, you know, getting good grades and I'm like, okay, wait, I'm getting good grades. Why don't I have a scholarship? So I spoke up. I actually used my voice because, hey, I have one. I got to use it. I'm smart as everybody else. I deserve a scholarship. And I was gifted a scholarship, which I continued to work hard for, to continue to have all the way up until high school. And then when I got into high school, it was my senior year. We were doing some essay or that was going to be sent out to some scholarship people. Because that was part of our class. And then I got an email saying, hey, Dion, you've been selected for a scholarship or granted a scholarship that I didn't apply for. But somehow they got in contact with me because of an essay. So, yes, me graduating from high school, considering all the struggles and shit I had to go through to overcome, just simply trying to evolve as a human in general, it was a pivotal moment for myself and everyone in my family. But aside from my story with that, that's not where my story really ends. As I come to realize in 2019, which I think you sort of are familiar with, but I'm going to share that with your audience who aren't aware. So I, you know, went on to college, you know, dealt with simple college loans and college prices and all those other scenarios. Fast forward to 2019, I'm still in college. I already have an associate's degree at this point. I'm working towards another associate's, but in graphic design. It seemed like my life was relatively at normal for my adulthood, somewhat normal, because adulthood nor life is ever normal. So it was somewhat normal at this point. I had a handle on school, but all of that came crashing down like a ton of bricks or a thunderstorm, if you will, because in 2019, November 2019, to be more specific, I just got horribly, horribly sick. I was basically a skeleton. My body was eating itself from the inside out. It was probably the most darkest, most depressing moment in my life. I've never been that depressed, to my recollection. And it was horrible. There was no explanation yet. There was an explanation that I'll get to in a few moments. But I was basically dying. I could have turned to dust at any given moment. I had just turned 24. It was Thanksgiving, birthdays, holidays, all these moments in one's life that you're supposed to be happy for, and I couldn't be happy. I wasn't smiling. There was no smile. There was no meat on my bones whatsoever. It was just absolutely horrible. My mental health was incredibly, incredibly low. My faith was incredibly, incredibly low. Like, okay, God, what's going on here? Because I thought I wasn't going to hear his answer until I was up in heaven. Like, by the time I heard him, it was going to be too late. We went to the doctors. They thought it was a stomach bug. Nobody could give a concrete reason as to what was happening to me. I would have a bite of something and be full, or two bites and be full, and I would throw up. This was an ongoing scenario for about 2 months, November to December. So there's a good chance I wasn't going to be able to see Christmas, honestly. So it's a miracle I was able to see that. It was just such a depressing time. I emotionally screamed at my family. I actually had a suicide thought, the first suicide thought I've ever had since I was 10 or 12 years old. To have that in my adulthood, I was truly suffering, and there was no explanation to what was happening to me. So fast forward to January 8th, I finally get my answer. And all those things that was happening to me, why I was suffering, why I was a skeleton, was symptoms of diabetes. So on January 8th, the doctors told me, hey, you have diabetes. I know your listeners want to know what type. This news of being diabetic was all very, very new to me, as it was to my family. And I didn't, at that precise moment in time, it didn't seem imperative to figure out what type I had. But for 2 years, so that would mean we've been 2 years into this pandemic. So yes, your audience heard that right. I was diagnosed in January 2020, which is when the whole brunt of this pandemic truly got worse. So I've been diabetic for 2 years, which means we've gone through this pandemic for 2 years. So that last thing probably anyone anticipated was for me to be diagnosed with anything during this virus. But that was the case for me. I saw it as a blessing in disguise because I could have died. It was just a depressing period in my life. I finally had school on lock and all of that came crashing down. And if it wasn't for me being diagnosed with diabetes, even though it did happen in 2020, which we all want to hate, and I completely respect those of you who want to hate the year, I wish I could hate it too, but as much as I want to hate the year with everybody, I really can't, because it's not even likely, it's a really good chance, concrete, 100% fact, that I wasn't going to live to see 2020. So it should have been, honestly, I could have died. That's not a joke. I was on death's row. It took God's love and grace to resurrect me from the dead through my diagnosis, because I wasn't going to see 2020. I wasn't going to be able to experience all of life had to offer. But here we are, 2022. I'm still here. I have a podcast. My diagnosis inevitably led me to launch my podcast and to be an advocate for change and to amplify other people's voices when I'm fairly familiar with my own voice being silent, if you will. So, yes, I've gone through a lot of impossible scenarios, first when I was born, and then having to survive being diabetic in this pandemic when at this point in time there was no vaccine or anything close to it curing people. And I was part of that factor where if you do get the virus because of my diabetes, then you're screwed. More screwed than anybody else. So the fact that I was able to acclimate to this new health change in my life while this virus was going on is a good blessing. It's a miracle that I survived this change. But yes, the term impossible I'm very familiar with, but it's made me a stronger person as a result of that. And if I hadn't been diagnosed, I wouldn't still be here. I wouldn't be having this conversation with you, and I wouldn't be using my podcast, Words of Heart, as a platform for those to share their stories. So it's a pretty good thing I did get diabetes. Although many people, particularly my family, was not a fan of me being diabetic when they found out, considering I had to go through so much crap when I was younger, and to go through now this new health change in my adulthood was like a slap in the face to them, because she doesn't deserve this, but it's better than me simply not being cured. So
I mean, how did your family take that? And then also, I want to give flowers and talk a bit about the teacher turned mentor. But before we do that, how, because to hear you say, like, you know, your family kind of felt like, and I don't know, maybe when I hear you, my interpretation slash my vision of what go ahead, my bad.
No worries. Yeah, they hated, I mean, yay, they were glad that I'm alive, but they just thought it was so unfair for me, considering all I went through to get to where I was. And it seemed like I was at a point in my life where I was in school, I was intelligent, I the speed bumps of my life weren't going to be interfering in my life at this point. Like, I can progress life with not a lot of speed bumps, because I've gone through a lot of speed bumps already. It seemed like I was at a normal rhythm, finally. Mentally, physically, I was at a good pace. But, I mean, it was depressing for them as far as me before I got diagnosed. My dad cried every single day. My dad's a really tough person. He doesn't share his emotions. I mean, well, in front of people, he doesn't make it known that there's something wrong. But even at his job, his coworker, like, he was crying. I never know my dad to reveal his emotions in a professional form. So, but yeah, it wasn't easy for them while I was sick. And to be diagnosed with diabetes, there's no history of diabetes. I mean, I didn't know that at that point. Later on, I did find out that some people in my family have diabetes, but they just thought it was unfair, because why should she have to go through this? She's gone through so much already, has overcome so much. Why does she have to overcome this now? It just seemed like life was never going to get any easier for me, if you will. And I can understand why they felt the way they felt. The last thing I wanted was to be diabetic. But in regards to the whole grand scheme of things, I could have died. Like, I mean, even seeing pictures to this point, it's devastating to look at, because I'm a skeleton. Like, I know at this point why I was physically like that. I'm used, and I know as females are not supposed to talk about our weight, but I'm going to be blunt here, obviously. When I was admitted into the hospital, I'm used to weighing about 127 pounds or so, give or take. But when I was admitted to that hospital, I was about 80 pounds, probably less than that. So I shouldn't even been walking. I shouldn't even been breathing, let alone be able to physically be in any type of body. I should have been dust, honestly. So in regards to me being diagnosed and my family reaction to that, no, they did not want this to happen to me because of all I've went through. But they did come around, because they realized that I was handling it a lot better than they were, because I saw it as a blessing, because, hey, I'm alive, I'm not dead. I think they ended up coming around because of my reaction to it. Even though I did handle it well, I didn't make it a point to discuss it to anyone. I'm pretty active on social media, but I didn't talk about it. I took a break from school. I got diagnosed in January, so I took a break from school. And also, and I think this is important to mention, because it's still pretty cool, that while I was dying on the cusp of death, could have turned into dust at any given moment, I somehow still managed to pass my classes while I was on death row, pretty much. And that's its own separate little miracle as far as how God works, because I was missing like so many classes that as a college student, you probably shouldn't miss. And I was already retaking one class. So the fact that I was able to pass is its own separate little miracle outside of the fact that, hey, I'm still alive. I'm not dead. So I took a break from school. This was January because school term starts in January over here in Florida for the spring semester. I took a break from school, so I had time to adjust to this news, but I didn't discuss it with anyone. I didn't know anything about diabetes. My best friend, Zandra, and this is a backtrack to my childhood. I did mention I didn't have that group socialization, which is absolutely the 100% truth, but I did probably have one friend, I'm one friend in my whole entire life. Time of from 4 or 5 years old to adulthood. She was diabetic as well. So she was probably my number one go-to as far as adjusting to this news. But yeah, it was a lot for me to process. Like, okay, this is a part of my life now. How do I handle this now? So people would ask me, hey, how are you doing? Or my family, I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. But I would lie. Honestly, when I would say I was okay, I mean, we mean different ways when we say the word okay, but in this instance, I actually lied because it was hard enough for me to process. I didn't want to place that as if it was a burden onto anyone else. So I didn't, yeah.
Well, let me ask you, why did you feel like it was a burden instead of simply a way to certainly let your family know, mentally I'm not doing all right. Physically, I'm not doing okay. Like, why did you feel as though it was a burden?
Because
potential burden.
Well, being diabetic really changed my life, and I guess to some extent the lives of my family as well. I have to have medical doctors. I mean, up until this point, I didn't really have a primary doctor or did regular checkups or did any doctor's appointment as one should. Doctors are expensive, money's expensive. So as far as the whole medical checkups and everything, I didn't get that on a daily basis. So now it's absolutely necessary because I have to have a doctor. I have to have a diabetes doctor and have these checkups more regularly because I'm diabetic. I have to have specialized food and everything and have insulin and supplies. And diabetic supplies, or at least insulin, is not cheap. It is cheap at Walmart, though. We did soon realize that as well. But
good old Wally World.
It seemed like it changed a lot of things, and I think maybe the reason I'm trying to explain it correctly because when did I start feeling like this? Got diagnosed in January. I felt this for at least a good couple, 2 months. March is when I actually started to feel like myself again. It was a lot. And the thing is, my dad raised me. He's a single parent. And I was in college. I didn't have much going for me. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a car or even a license really at that point. And we were in the, I guess you can call it the rough side of Florida or St. Pete. And I mean, he does a lot for me. I think, yeah, I guess in respect to my family, I guess it was really my dad. He does a lot for me already. And I just felt unbelievably guilty that this new part of my life he has to take on as well, along with me having to handle it. So I felt pretty bad about the fact, I mean, that I mean, hey, I'm alive, yay, but I mean, being diagnosed with diabetes isn't like something you can take a pill for. This is an ongoing scenario, and has to be monitored. Like, if your blood sugar's at 60, you're dead. If your blood sugar's at 500, you're dead. So it could change rapidly at any moment in time. And I already hate making people worry, and I just hated that this was a part of my life that he has to be responsible for as well. So,
well, see, with love, there's no hate, especially love for your own child. So when I hear you say I hate it, it's like, you know, and I know you don't mean that with like such a rigid stance behind it. You know, the things I've gone through, from me being shot in my back to me having to deal with both of my parents no longer being alive in a physical form, to me dealing with moments of being damn near homeless, having to live out of hotels. I've come to realize that, you know, a little backdrop. I wanted to be a running back in the NFL. I went out to Dayton, Ohio. Well, it was next to Dayton, Ohio, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, to stay with my aunt Benita, over the summer. I believe I was 16. Yeah, I was 16 that year. I just got into gang banging. I just got into selling weed at high school. My mom, you know, I was being a disrespectful son, and she was like, to hell with this shit. I'm going to send you out to your Aunt Benita. My Aunt Benita was known for handling the unruly teenagers within our family. So now it was my turn. So I went out there. I actually loved it. Was riding my bike to Desi at the Air Force Base with my uncle Lee. Just got in tremendous shape. I was super quick. My jumping ability was out the roof. And I wanted to stay. I asked my mom. I was like, Mommy, can I please stay? I feel like I'm going to excel. My goal was to go to Stevenson High School, then graduate and go to The Ohio State, star as a running back, be in the NFL. The rest would have been history. But my mommy was like, nope, you're coming back home. And I really hated, and I used to use that word, hated that. Until fast forward, because I don't want to make it lengthy about, again, Torch. Fast forward to now being, as I like to say, a professional conversationalist. You know, you certainly, like myself, we have testimonies to provide unto others through the blessings of God giving us these testimonies, and though they were tremendous trials and perhaps even tribulations, we've learned to certainly find strength within not only surviving but thriving through those moments. And so I want you to certainly hold on to the fact that though you may have internalized and hated, not with an evil type of stance, but just hated the fact that, like, shit, I don't want my family to certainly have to endure yet another element that can not only alter the way I live, but as you stated earlier, can certainly have killed me. So I definitely understand how you internalize and have like such a disdain toward having to go through so many obstacles. Yet, little sis, the reality is you are so amazingly strong that for the next king and or queen, or prince and or princess who needs to really hear your testimony, be it here on The Crow Show, be it on Words of Heart podcast, be it you walking down the street, be it on someone else's podcast platform, be it wherever, your testimony is exactly what is needed. And as I had to come to grips with myself, I'm like, this was meant to happen. I was meant to be shot in my back. I was meant to go through phases of being homeless and damn near homeless as well. You know, just so many things that you question, like, why me? However, you know, when I think about your walk of life and where you're at now, it's like, yo, why not you? Because you were created to be that walking anomaly to these crazy ass doctors who were assholes in the very beginning. You know, you were created to be that walking testimony for not just men like myself, but people all around the world who can relate to going through tremendous struggles in life, be it exactly what you've had to go through from a health standpoint, or just life in general, from being alienated or having to feel alone, thinking about thoughts of suicide. I've been there, shit, real talk. So when I'm sitting here marveled, and for the listeners, you know, if I'm quiet, that means I'm really, really enveloped, because I'm a motor mouth. So, you know, I'm over here just like deep in thought. So I don't want someone to think that I wasn't, like, you know, listening, like I'm over here like, damn, you know, like my heart really, I won't say feels for you. My heart really understands you. Like, even if you may not, because you're still young, you know, I'm 45 years young. So I've come to that point of realization, like, oh, that's why having a podcast matters. Like I told someone the other day, I said, you know, I am wealthy, and not because I have money in my bank account, because Lord knows. It's because I've been blessed to have people send me emails or while I'm on the street, have that conversation, and they thank me for being transparently who I am. That makes me, that when you can affect the youth especially, and I've been blessed to do that, like, that makes me wealthy. And to me, little sis, you're definitely wealthy. You've managed to hold on when many people would have thrown in the towel, and God rewards those. I know this from my own experience. So learn, if I may be allowed to just give that tidbit, learn not to hate. Learn not to hate that you went through those things. Embrace that. Embrace it. Not saying you don't now, but I mean, really, really embrace that you had to. You were the one who was chosen to go through those things and those health ailments, better yet. And you were the one chosen to come out on the other side of those. Embrace them. Embrace it.
Absolutely. And perhaps the word hate wasn't the right word.
That's all right.
Because I'm absolutely grateful for everything that I've endured in my life.
Yes.
I mean, yes. I'm considered like the miracle child in my family. And I don't think that nickname that was given to me was by accident. Because, hey, I am a walking, breathing testimony, as you indicated.
Say that.
And honestly, it wasn't really until I started podcasting, which is a blessing and wonderful platform. Because I did mention that it was symbiotic to my journey as well, because it's such a vocal and broad platform. And it was really God that laid the word warrior on my heart and to begin with, and to be more vocal, which inevitably led me to launch my podcast. But it wasn't until I got into podcasting, and this is soon to be 2 years into this, that I understood the real depths within my own story and testimony. Like, me sharing with you and your audience, hey, I couldn't hear her talk, that wasn't a part of my story I ever shared or discussed with someone on the street, or even as someone I've probably been friends with for 5 years. Like, that was a part of my story I didn't share, nor did I thought was relevant to share. I didn't think it was important to share. But I got into podcasting and I realized that, hello, this is your birth story. You should share. This is the why you felt like this. This is why you overcome so much. Everything started really when I was born. So I should share it. It's a part of me. It's what makes me who I am. So I am happy, and I'm not oblivious to the fact that it's made me all a better person for it. And now that I'm helping others through my platform, just feel loved and important, and just remind them of the fact that we're all in this together. No one is truly, truly ever alone. Is absolutely incredible. And considering podcasts is not just sharing my story, it's opened doors to so many other people's stories. And you're already familiar with this because we follow each other on Twitter. But the fact that I ended up in a magazine a year into podcasting, mind you, that is, and this it's pivotal to my own podcasting journey, but my own personal journey as well, considering all, because that magazine's for everybody across the world to see, not just about my podcast, but also my journey, because it's coincides with each other. Like,
facts.
One can't exist without the other.
Mm-hmm. Facts.
So I am very aware and blessed that my existence is still here, because it is important to a lot of people more than I realize.
So I'm like, you know, shoot, you gotta hold them shoulders upright, and you know what I'm saying, walk your walk and talk your ish respectfully. You know, you deserve it. You know what I'm saying? You definitely deserve it. And I am curious how much of an influence the teacher turned mentor.
Yes.
Had, you know, how much of an influence did she have, and does she still have on your life?
She certainly does still have an influence on my life. She met me when I was 3 years old, in a special ed classroom, and she took an interest in me right away. Her and my father pleaded with the school system or the principal of my elementary school, like, hey, this girl does not deserve to be in here. And they do tests and analyze kids and evaluations and all types of things when you have disabilities. So, like, let's get her retested. So she advocated for me. She had a lot of faith in me from early on, which many people, many people you wouldn't think to. Like, the doctors dismissed me, so why should this woman have any interest in me? But she did. She continued to teach me. I was in a special ed classroom in kindergarten, so she taught me for about, I want to say 2 years, 2 or 3 years. I want to say 2 years. I don't really know how the year dynamic from preschool, pre-K to kindergarten. I don't really know how that works, but and she continued to check in on me at the same elementary school. Like, how are you doing? How are you doing? And I continued to visit her classroom early in the morning before the bell rung, because, again, I decided to become a hall monitor. So hall monitors get to go into school free or sooner than other students. So I would see her. And we continued that dynamic all throughout elementary school. I got into middle school. Eventually there was Facebook and MySpace and whatever you want to think of. I didn't end up having Facebook at some point. I don't really remember what year. I want to say when it launched, 2009 or whatever. I hadn't spoken to her, but she did have Facebook. But because she was in the school system and I was no longer her student, or it wasn't ethically appropriate to befriend a teacher. And I can understand, I had trouble understanding that when I added her at the time, but when I got older, I got it, because it wouldn't have been appropriate. So, I graduate from high school. I find her again, like, hey, I'm no longer part of the regular school system, so I can be your friend. So we befriend each other on Facebook, and she continued to message me and communicate and reach out to me. I did go to college, as I mentioned, but before I went to St. Petersburg College here in Florida, I thought my mission and purpose was become a youth pastor. So I decided to go to a Bible college first when I graduated high school. But I only went there for about a year. God steered me in a different direction when it didn't work out, obviously. But yeah, she was there for me and communicated with me when I was struggling to be away from home, to find my rhythm in an environment that I had trouble with. Just to give you some further insight into that. Because I was having trouble with that particular college, there's different like congregations and demographics, but what I grew up believing was the Assembly of God. The whole school or college, if you will, believes in the Church of Christ. So, it's still Christian, it's still God. It's no different than anything else, but it was different in some ways because their particular belief or what they grew up with, they believe a female role should be in children's ministry. It should not be in a leadership role. So that is what made it, it hurt to hear that because, I grew up with the acknowledgement that a female can be a pastor or a youth pastor or any type of pastor. And I've seen females become pastors. So it wasn't like, it can happen. So why is this alien? But it's what they grew up with, and I can't disparage them for what they grew up with, but I was still friends with them. I still communicated with them and we hung out and everything because, hey, it's college, gotta live it up. But in that respect, as far as faith wise, I was pretty separate from them because, they would go to church I try to go to their church. I try to assimilate myself in what they believe in, but I wasn't into it. I just couldn't connect with it. So I had my own Bible study and session in my room. And that was hard because I'm used to being in a church environment, being with people who believe what I believe in. And at this college, it was different. I just was the only person that believed this. So I struggled with just being away from home, my faith being different from theirs. And she communicated with me. And then fast forward, obviously it didn't work out at that particular school. Because I passed the first semester, second semester. I was too immersed in the college culture of social life. Which, like I said, when I got to high school, my socialness went through the roof. So I came home, went to college, St. Petersburg College here. I was still communicating with her, and we decided to have a lunch, to like meet up and have a lunch because my sister ran into her one day or something. She gave her my number, and we decided to have a lunch, like a meetup. And I wish I remember what year. I want to say 2016, 2017, one of those years. We decided to meet up and have lunch. And it was the first time the last time I saw her was when I graduated from elementary school. And that would be May 18th, I want to say 2007. I even remember the year I graduated from elementary school, which is pretty cool. But I haven't seen her at all. So we had lunch. We talked about what was going on with my family and what's going on with school. And she has more confidence in me than I probably do because like, oh, you do have the capacity to do this. You just have to be assertive. And she has a way of putting things that my family has told me into in a context that I can better understand, and that's not so stricter, a bit gentler, if you will. So we had lunch, and we continued to have like an annual lunch every single year. She even went to my college graduation. And my family were found it pretty fun and surprising that, oh, who's this lady? I mean, because my family is mixed. I mean, my dad's side of the family is Hispanic. So like, they're like, who is this white lady? But my dad obviously knew who she was. And I mean, the bond we have for her to actually come to my college graduation, it's just incredible. So she went to my college graduation, we continued to talk and communicate. Fast forward to, I guess, pandemic season, I did tell her about my news with diabetes. She's probably the one of the few people I trusted to share that news, because she was just very understanding and sympathetic to what I was going through. It wasn't until, when was it? Either it was July or June when we had our last annual lunch, because of the pandemic, things were limited and stricter. And again, we discussed what was going on in my life and school and my diabetes and just adjusting to everything. I mean, she's just such an amazing supporter and advocate. And to go even further as far as her interest in me and mentoring me, I got a job. I know you saw my post a while back that, hey, I have a job now in this aftercare program here in Florida, which involves children and watching them and supervising them. I needed a recommendation letter to explain my experience with children. And through our annual lunches and me being friends with her, she knows that I'm really close with my niece. And have a strong bond with her, and that I babysit, and that I volunteered in church and would do everything in my power, but that volunteering was with children. I ended up leading small groups and being that small group leader that actually lets the kids talk and not interrupt each other, unlike what that small group leader did for me. So she was already aware that I had experience with children. So she wrote a recommendation letter for me so I can get this job. And, man, I wish I had the letter on me, because it's a really beautifully written letter. But, the point of the matter is she just is such a supporter in regards to my life, and just, she's been there from the very, 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 very beginning, literally, and continues to support me. And thanks to her incredibly well-written letter, it was probably a real high point as to why I got the job to begin with, and coming up on a year into having this job as well. So she's just an incredible person. Her name is Catherine Pennington. And just to go into other insight, I think, and I could be wrong on the facts here, but I think there were points when I was little that we would do some type of fun activity outside of school. At least, I'm pretty sure we did that at least once. I don't remember specifically why. It was because my dad was a single parent. I think that's why that interaction occurred outside of school. But she's just an incredible, incredible person. And it's just such a big supporter. And she even has, like, let me put it in more modern terms, if you will. I know a lot of people are familiar with Boy Meets World, Mr. Corey and Mr. Feeny. She's basically my Mr. Feeny to my Corey, because Mr. Feeny was always there, even was in the little reboot of the show. But yeah, she's my Mr. Feeny in my life, and I just love her, and she's just an incredible person. She even, like, during our last lunch, she's like, oh, I'm thinking of retiring. And I'm like, no, don't retire. Like, Because I know her as a teacher. I know her as helping students, because that's how I grew up knowing her. So the idea of her not being a teacher is insane to me, even though she is not even my teacher anymore, which is what makes it so, so funny. But yeah, we have an incredible relationship. So,
shoot, bless up to her, because I can tell the effect she has on you. I can hear it and how highly you speak of her. So definitely bless up to her. You know, people like that, that are completely unexpected in your life when you're young, especially at the age of three, that is a very pivotal gift that you were blessed to enjoy. So definitely bless up to her. Now in closing, I want to get some tea out of you on this one. And this one I know should kind of be able to hit you out of left field, because, you know.
Okay.
I like to do this. So, let's say you had the ability to go back in time.
Okay. I like these questions.
So you're able to go back in time and you're sitting beside the Most High. You have the blessing of sitting beside God. And
I didn't know that was the question.
That's what I said. I'm about to get some tea out of you before we wind this down. So you're sitting next to the Most High. You're sitting next to God, and you are looking at God create you inside of your mommy's womb. Now, if you were able to have a conversation with God, and God, you knowing what you had to go through, as you mentioned here, and opened up your heart and was very transparent. I thank you for that. And I really thank you for that. If you were able to choose, because we all have to go through something in life. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
However, if you were able to choose, you know, I don't know if there's a board that God has, because I think that'll be very sadistic and like, what the hell is it? Where's the torch going with that? But I mean, you know, if you're able to choose and say, hey, I want to take away this, take away that, and you can have that conversation with God, how would that conversation flow? That's the tea I want.
Okay, so I think I know where you're going with the question. Would I ask him to give me the ability to speak or make a sound while he was creating me? That's a good question. I would have to tell him to not change anything. I would have to go back.
I like that.
Because I mean, as you said, things happen. Mm-hmm. I had an interview yesterday with a woman who can connect with archangels or feel them, if you will. And she wouldn't change that experience for anything in the world. So we were talking about our differences in my story, because I do mention it on my podcast quite a bit because it's important to me. We are born to be different and to have, and we have DNA that's different, that's specifically coherent, connected to who we are. I mentioned that. So I would have to say not to change anything, because as hard as it is for people to believe my story at times, mm-hmm. it was destined to happen. Mm-hmm. And I was born to be different.
Say that.
I was born to be different.
Love it. I love it. Let everybody know where they can find you. As your age genre says, your handle, your social media handle, I guess.
Yeah. All my handles, which are so many, you would think. So they can find me on my Facebook page, which is called Words of Fire Podcast. They could find me on Twitter at HeartWarrior24. You can also find me on Instagram at HeartWarrior25. I'm also on LinkedIn as Dion Stanches, although I would like that to really be for business purposes only. But Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Oh, I almost forgot. I'm also on YouTube as well. So you can really tune into my podcast and get in touch with me in any of those following ways. I'm pretty active. I don't sleep like ever. So even though that is important for one's mental health, of course.
Yes, it is.
I have to put that up front, but I'm just weird like that. So, but yeah, they can get in touch with me on any of those platforms. Like I said, I have a podcast. It's pretty awesome.
Yes, it is.
I'm actually going to be wrapping up the third season later this month. So that's a little exclusive for your listeners there if they want to catch up. Which
indeed.
There's a million episodes at this point. So, yes, thank you for having me, Torch.
Shoot, but I will give this last
little tidbit for your listeners, because I say this on any podcast I appear, and that is that they are a warrior in spite of their circumstances.
I love that. I love that. And that goes right along with when I tell my listeners to remember to put a smile on someone's face today and tomorrow, starting with your own. So that goes right in line with what you said. Also, you have to check my girl out, check my little sis out on Twitter Spaces.
It's funny you say that, because I had probably one Twitter space.
Yep, I'm putting you on the spot.
I tried to have another one. I waited a good 20 or 30 minutes. And I don't know where you were at, Torres. Maybe you were sleeping.
I was working.
Nobody tuned into that. So I ended up going a different direction as far as that Twitter space. And I ended up doing Instagram Live for my podcast, which I don't do often either. So, yeah, you can find me on Twitter Spaces and on Instagram Live, which are both two different dynamics outside of my regular podcasting episodes. So,
and look, even many people who go fishing don't always land that big catch the first time. You know, promoting is everything on Twitter, in my opinion. I actually look at my analytics, so I get it. Like, you have to promote.
I think the problem was with the second one is it was a really random and spontaneity thing for me to do. It was about self-love. It wasn't that random.
No, you still have to promote.
But you do have to do a good job.
During. I think that's why a lot of people want me to be their co-host, because they know if I like your space, I'm going to like blast the heck out of it on Twitter, because that's how people are going to come. You know, if you have well over 1,000 friends, which you do, but for anyone listening who does Twitter Spaces, if you have well over 1,000 friends, you're gonna have to promote, because there are so many Twitter Spaces that they're seeing. Oops, I don't know what just happened there. That they're seeing. So, and I apologize for the ding from my laptop.
It's okay.
But there's so many Twitter Spaces that they're seeing. So yeah, you have to really, really pump it out there so that it goes down that feed, and then all of a sudden you'll start seeing people show. And if you can't do it because it is harder as the host, it's something you have to get used to doing, and I am, then you know, ask your co-host, like, yo, you don't have to put them on blast live, but go in his or her DM and say, yo, do me a favor, share this, retweet this, because we need more people to the space, so I can, you know what I'm saying, get a good conversation flow going. So don't be afraid to ask. And with that, you have been phenomenal with being open and transparent. I definitely need to have a part two with you. And you know what I'm saying? Bless up to you. Thank you for accepting the invitation. And please do not stop producing the greatness that you've been producing. And I mean that.
Thank you, George. It was an absolute honor being on your podcast.
I will talk with you soon, and I have to play the wonderful job of editor. But this will be easy because it flowed really, really easy. So blessings, 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 and we shall chat again soon.